Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Carvana Technologies Corporation third quarter 2015 results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up for questions. Before beginning its formal remarks, Carvana would like to remind listeners that certain portions of today's discussion may contain forward-looking statements that reflect views with respect to future events. Any such statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those projected in those forward-looking statements. For more information on the forward-looking statements and the company's risks and uncertainties relating to such forward-looking statements, please read Carvana's annual report as filed on SEDAR and which is also posted on their website, www.carvana.com. All currency amounts are expressed in US dollars with the exception of the company's TSX listed share price, which is quoted in Canadian dollars. The company's financial statements are prepared in accordance with IFRS or International Financial Reporting Standards. During this call, the company may also refer to adjusted EBITDA, a non-IFRS financial measure, which is calculated as earnings before interest, income taxes, financial measure, which is income taxes, amortization, stock-based compensations, and various one-time charges, which are detailed in their publicly filed management discussion and analysis. Carvana uses their metric internally in addition to others to make strategic decisions and evaluate their performance. If anyone has any difficulty hearing the conference, please press star zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded today, Friday, November 13th, 2015, at 2:00 P.M. Pacific Time and 5:00 P.M. Eastern Time. I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. John Simmons, Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks, operator. As the operator said, I'm John Simmons, and I'm here today with Evan Brown, our Chief Financial Officer. We're also here with a live audience being our head office staff and operations people here in beautiful and wet Victoria, British Columbia. Every month, we hold town hall-type meetings where we get together as a group to discuss the business in general. These are an important part of our culture at Carvana and are helpful in keeping everyone up to speed with the evolving nature of our businesses. Once a year, we embed this analyst conference call into one of our town hall meetings. We think it's interesting for our staff to understand the role of the analysts and to hear the questions and responses to these from a shareholder's perspective. Now, before we get started, I would like the analysts and other listeners to indulge me for a minute as I thank all of our Carvana colleagues for their great work in our Q3. We had a fabulous quarter, not universally, but almost in every respect. This was the result of the diligent effort of all of you here in the room today, together with our colleagues around the world. On behalf of our board and shareholders, thank you, and give yourself a round of applause. As is our practice for these calls, I'll make some brief opening comments about our Q3 2015 results that were released after the close of market yesterday, and then open the conference for your questions and comments. Again, I really want to encourage your questions and hope that you will get into the question queue. On to the results. Yesterday, we issued a news release that summarized Q3, and we also filed our complete financials and MD&A on SEDAR. Let's start with a revenue review. The very first thing to note is that for the first time, Q3 includes the results of the Sabot Group of companies that were acquired by Carvana on July 2nd, 2015. It is with Sabot results that I wish to begin. In Q3, Sabot generated about $6 million in revenue, which was up substantially from their prior year Q3 and up significantly from our expectations. What makes this so remarkable is that they produced these results right on the heels of completing the acquisition transaction, which is a major distraction, but also in the midst of moving the Finland-based business into a new plant and office. At the same time all of this was happening, Evan and his finance team were establishing reporting mechanisms so that we could file these financials on time. In spite of distraction after distraction, our new colleagues still managed to generate record-level revenues. It was great work, and we couldn't be more pleased. We're also delighted with the balance of our Signals division businesses. In Q3, our Signals group generated further gains compared to Q3 2014. In fact, year-to-date revenues in our Signals segment, not including SABIC, is up 37% on a year-to-date basis, which is a great result. Similarly, our Power segment is up as well. Both our on-grid and off-grid businesses have shown remarkable growth this year, with year-to-date revenues up 58% over 2014. Again, a great result. And while Signals and Power have moved forward tremendously, the same cannot be said for our Illumination business group that had a very disappointing Q3 and is significantly down below 2014 and our expectations. I'm sure we'll have quite a few questions about this business after I finish these opening comments, but let me start with a few observations. Illumination is a project business, and project commencement dates are often outside of our control. This was the case for part of the shortfall in Q3. In fact, by quarter end, we had secured a reasonable number of orders which are in the process of being completed. This will lead to a sales rebound in Q4. But when I say sales rebound, I want to be careful not to suggest that our Illumination business will be fully back on track by year end. This will not be the case. In fact, while we expect to have a pretty decent Q4, our total 2015 year will be less than 2014. And in 2014, we only had the benefit of the Sol acquisition for the latter half of the year. So clearly this is a miss and is something that's getting our serious attention. I also want to reiterate that we're fully committed to the LED solar illumination business. Even though this business has faltered, we believe that the growth prospects are great, driven mostly by component cost curves that will ultimately make outdoor solar lighting less expensive to build in new construction settings than the traditional grid-tied alternatives. I want to leave illumination comments at that, as I'm sure there will be more questions and more discussion at the end of the call, but I will say that this is the first falter we have had as a company since the beginning of our turnaround process about 2 years ago. Our true measure is how we will react to this and what steps we are successful in taking to get this business back on track. As I said to someone a few days ago, we now have something to really focus on. So to recap, from an overall revenue perspective, we've had a great result. Carmena originated business is up 14% year over year in the quarter. And in spite of the large decline in illumination revenues. And the SABIC addition has well exceeded expectations and significantly ahead of its Q3 2014 performance. Let's move to gross margins. Our gross margin performance in Q3 is a bit of a mixed bag as well. Signals margins remain strong, averaging about 42%. This looks like a bit of a decline from 2014, but I remind you that 2014 included an anomaly that distorted margins to the high side. Gross margins in our power businesses were down and affected by two things. Sales mix that favored our lower margin on-grid business that was further weighed down by a low Canadian dollar. And a temporary reduction in our off-grid margins resulting from some inventory that became subject to anti-dumping duties imposed in the United States. Illumination margins are also down, but this is really a result of very low dollar volume sales. Within our cost of sales, we have some standing items like production equipment costs that are being amortized, as well as a grab bag of other costs and effects that reduce margin percentages when sales are very low, like they were in Q3. If Q3 revenues had been close to former Q1 or Q2 revenues, margins would have been relatively stable. Overall, we incurred a net loss in the quarter of just under $300,000. A big contributor to the loss in the quarter related to the purchase price allocation for the SABIC acquisition. On the closing date, SABIC had a significant order backlog from which a future profit of $1.3 million was estimated. This estimated profit was recorded as an intangible asset on the acquisition date and is being amortized as orders are shipped, to the effect that we were reporting almost no profit on the business that we completed through much of the SABIC sales in the quarter. The income statement effect of this amortization was approximately $850,000 in the third quarter. Normalized net income for the quarter would have been about $500,000 if not for the order backlog amortization related to the acquisition. The removal of the profit from the SABIC backlog orders acquired on closing is eliminated when considering adjusted EBITDA, which we think is a better measure of our performance. EBITDA in the quarter was about $2.1 million, up nearly $1 million from Q3 in 2014, and is in line with our expectations. So I think I'll leave it there, and in doing so, I welcome your questions or comments. Thank you, operator. Over to you for questions.
Thank you, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. There will be a delay before the first question is announced. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. Standing by for questions. And our first question comes from Mike Plaster from Fallman Partners. Mike, please go ahead.
Thanks very much. Hello, everyone. I've got a few questions here. I'm going to start with the signaling business. It was good to see the organic growth sort of ex-SABIC in the quarter. Just wondering, John, if you could maybe drill down a bit more on that in terms of where some of that growth was. I'm just wondering which verticals you're finding the most traction in at this point.
Yeah, Mike, you know, I can make some general comments on that. You know, from a segmentation standpoint, that we generally don't provide detailed information below the general category. But I would say that we are up generally overall on a year-to-date basis with all businesses, so it's shared. I would say that the strong performers for us have been marine and would be our strongest performer of the group, and our traffic business has also done very well.
Okay, that helps. Okay, and on the G&A side of things, if we were to back out that additional amortization from the SABIC backlog, is that a reasonable run rate for G&A going forward, or do you think you might be able to take some more costs out of the system once the dust settles on the integration and of SABIC and so on?
No, I think that that's about it. We remember when we talked about this last quarter, we don't think that there are significant cost-saving synergies on this acquisition. It's more, you know, we think that the synergies are going to be shown more on the sales side.
Okay. Now, on the illumination division, I mean, I appreciate the fact that it's obviously a bit of a lumpy business for the sales and so on, and that makes sense with the miss in the quarter. But just with the integration of Sol, I think on a previous call you talked about sort of trying to achieve a 1 plus 1 equals 2, putting everything together. Just wondering how far along in that process you think you are at this point?
Oh, 1 plus 1 has actually delivered about 0.5 so far, to be facetious. But we've done a lot of work this year in transforming that business, moving its product line from a self-manufactured operation at Sol into a contract manufacturing model, which was, you know, the Carmanna standard, and changing roles and responsibilities there. So to say that some of this has not created some distraction that finds its way into sales would probably be an error. But, you know, we forecasted our internal forecast, again, which we don't share, but I'll comment on, was for no growth in illumination sales for this year on combination. But we are achieving less than that at this point in time. So.
Okay.
So still some work to do.
Okay, fair enough. And just finally, kind of on the M&A front, I wonder if you could give us any updates there, just to the extent you can, obviously, on how the prospects are looking for any more acquisitions down the road.
Well, we've been very busy with discussions and have on, and so I would say the universe of discussions have spanned about eight or nine companies that we have had some level of discussion with. Currently, we have active discussions ongoing in three files. I can't handicap our chances of being successful with any one of these. And as I've said in the past, acquisitions have to be allowed to find their own timing. So this is work that we're actively pursuing. We are always looking for opportunities to acquire in these various spaces that we're in, because they are fragmented. We think we're the natural consolidator. But, you know, you've got to do deals that make sense. We have to be prudent. These discussions often take a long time and have an uncertain outcome.
Okay, that helps. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Deepak Kasho with GMP. Please go ahead, Deepak.
Hi, John. Thank you for taking my questions.
Nice to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's good to hear you. You know, I did want to come back to the illumination business. When you characterized it, you said it faltered, and you mentioned some distraction in sales. I was wondering if you could maybe offer some more color on this. Was it a case where you've lost opportunities to competitors, or did the opportunities disappear? Did they get pushed to the right? Or was the outlook more optimistic than the market was providing?
You know, that's a great question. We have lost very little that we can identify. So those projects in our sales pipeline, more often than not, they are delayed or put on hold, and that's more typical than project loss. I think we had one project loss that I am aware of that was of some significance, but it's been. But generally, we are not losing to competitors. I would say that certainly the offshore work is subject to timetables that are often delayed, often beset with financing challenges. The developed world or domestic markets, you know, this is often, our component is often a part of a much larger construction project, and these things have their own timetables as well. But I would also say that it's my feeling that we just haven't had enough projects at the top of the sales funnel. So if we had more potential projects at the top of our sales funnel, then our odds of having a miss like this would become less. And I want to make one other distinction as well. Historically, the business of selling solar-powered street lighting or outdoor lighting has really been to customers who are motivated to buy these products because they are either wanting to make a green statement, or alternatively, they have some inability to access the grid efficiently. And that's the business plan that we have been working on and are still working on. So in other words, seeking those customers who can meet those two conditions, or whose projects meet those conditions. In the future, and why we're committed to this business, is that we see a convergence of cost curves where the cost of providing solar is moving down very quickly, and we can, I think, fairly predict that the cost of installing solar-powered streetlights for new construction will be less costly than for customers than extending the grid to light by way of grid tied, you know, the incumbent approach to providing lighting. So we've completed two parity studies this year. We know that there are certain applications in certain places, and you would typically say the sunny states in the United States, where we think we are at or just beyond parity, so that favors us. And our thesis is that as these cost curves continue to move, more and more projects will become attractive for solar because the cost, not just the green element, not just the inability to access the grid, but the pure cost compared to the grid will be less. So we are preparing ourselves for a changing business plan that takes this into account. It requires some technology development. It's going to require a different approach to the business, and we're working on that, and we think we will be moving towards this new goal by mid-year 2016. Long answer. I'm sorry, but it was
very helpful. You know, I guess the second part to that question, and you've alluded to part of it. What other changes can you share that you're contemplating in terms of a go-to-market strategy or a sales strategy? And you know, I expect it might take some investment to try and shift perception on the where the cost of solar power lighting is today versus what it has been in the past. What can you tell us in terms of changes to the sales approach or go-to-market approach or investment in some of these new approaches?
Well, we still have a little. We still have a little bit of investment to make in terms of technology development. So one of our principal projects for the coming year, and in fact, part of it is underway now, is the development of a new lower-cost solar engine that will combine well with the latest and greatest LED luminaires in the world, which are going to allow us to produce a product with a lower bill of materials, but still great performance than was the case in the past. So there's a little bit of work to be done there. There will be some adjustments in terms of how we go to market. We're going to examine different channels. If we're really trying to drive a low-cost alternative for end users, we have to study efficient ways of getting this product to them, and so there will be some adjustment there. There's also going to need to be an investment in convincing end users once we are convinced that we have crossed that cost parity line that in fact has happened. Just because we say it has happened won't necessarily mean that legions of customers will immediately nod their head in approval. We're going to have to go through the tough task of once we know the truth of convincing them what the truth is. So there is some investment there, and quite frankly, we haven't itemized everything we're doing in that respect. But all of this is based on the basic fundamental, the cost of solar, the efficiency of LEDs, the efficacy of new battery chemistries, all combine for us in a very positive way, and we think the future is great for solar outdoor lighting.
Okay, great. And if I can just dig into the actual quarter on the gross margin, as you mentioned, it was quite low. You know, from my read of the last couple of quarters, it's bounced around quite a bit, low 30s, then low 40s, now back to mid 20s. Was there any one-time items? I think I saw a mention of a warranty provision that, that hit in the quarter. What should we expect in terms of gross margin? What were the one-time items that impacted gross margin there?
What we have to do is get the revenues up so those one-time or those, you know, those kind of fixed cost matters that do find themselves in our cost of sales, like the amortization of some tooling that happens at our contract manufacturers. Those things are made inconsequential from a percentage standpoint. You know, we look at gross margins in two ways. We look at a basic gross margin, and then we burden it a little bit with those costs that are direct. I would say our margins should be targeting this 35 to 40% range at basic. The more we get revenue up, the more we can achieve that. So the selling prices have been okay, Deepak. This isn't really an issue for us right now. It's more about, you know, the basic revenues were so low in this quarter that it made it very difficult to give you any measure on margins that it's going to be meaningful.
Okay. And then just my last question, if I may, on signals, or sorry, illumination. I don't want to dominate the time here, but are you at a stage where you have visibility on a pipeline for 2016, or a sense of whether this business can grow again in 2016, or is it still too early in this transition period?
No, we think, I'll tell you what happened in Q3 is unacceptable, so it has to grow. And I can tell you that we're already rebounding in Q4. I mean, we had an order backlog for illumination at the end of Q3, which was more than double what we did in Q3, and more orders kind of coming in. So we're going to have kind of a nice rebound, and I would say we'll have a reasonable backlog heading into Q1 of 2016 as it looks now. Our expectations are for us to do more and to do better sort of next year. And, I think we're tending to look at this Q3 as an anomaly. And we'll have another one of these calls in a few months' time where we'll figure out whether that was true or not.
Okay, great. Well, I do have more questions, but I want to share the line here. So maybe I'll jump back in the queue, and if there's time,
I can
come back.
Yep.
Thanks again, John.
Thanks.
And our next question comes from Ravi LaPlace with Canaccord Genuity. Ravi, please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Just going back to the outdoor lighting business, could you speak a little bit to the sales cycle? So if you do get a big order, how quickly can you deliver on that?
Do you have an order?
Yeah, I'll try to find one.
So we have, currently we are running about 8 to 10 weeks would be the general time from order to delivery. It depends on whether this was in a forecast or not. So we work with our supply chain, and if it's a forecasted order, we can typically deliver in that time frame. But if it's an order that's not forecasted, it can take a little bit longer than that.
And as you would define as order, what size are we talking about, in millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars?
I think in the million-dollar range, an order like that is unforecasted would take longer, and I would say, 12, 14 weeks would be a typical run. Our supply chain manager sitting in the room is nodding his head, yes. So.
Okay. And, for example, if it's $20 million worth of orders, is there some upper limit that we should think about where you would be like, hey, we can't meet that capacity given the resources that you have and the contract manufacturing, all that stuff that you have going for you?
No, that wouldn't present much of a problem for us at all. This is a very scalable business. We're working with contract manufacturers for which we can grow almost limitlessly without any capital expenditure.
Thank you. And then with respect to the signals division, I'm wondering, will you need to keep passing on the cost? And I think you might have to keep passing on the cost, the decrease in the underlying component cost to your customers. And if that is the case, where do you see the signals margins ending up in the long term? Do they stay in the 40, or do they go percent range, or do they go lower to 35% range?
Our view is that margins for these highly specialized niche market products should properly be in this 40% range, and I think if we can run our business efficiently, we can compete with others in the world and justify those margins.
Okay, and then with respect to on-grid backlog, now that's coming down. Does that mean because it's not filling up as quickly as the work is being done, does that imply that 2016 could be relatively lower growth for this subdivision compared to 2015?
No, we expect growth in 2016, and we think that the backlog at the end of the year will be higher, and we think that there's still significant growth that we can expect in 2016.
All right, perfect. I'll jump. And SABIC, it doesn't have a backlog, or it's pretty purchase order sort of work at Wake, or do you have some visibility on that one as well going forward?
No, we do. Well, it varies a little bit by the two basic businesses. SABIC Marine, which is based in Finland, is does have a standing backlog of about as we ended this quarter, of about $1.5 million sort of moving forward. And in Germany, which is the offshore wind business, is about $8 million, most of which will be executed in the fourth quarter and through the first half of next year. So there's a pretty significant amount of business in front of us there. Those are larger projects, longer time, longer lead times, longer projects to complete.
Okay, and just my final question for you. Do you think you can quantify? You said that $6 million for SABIC, that was significant growth. Could you quantify that?
In other words, what was the year-over-year business, their Q3?
Yeah.
I think it was, just hang on a second. Hi, the Q3 2014 SABIC combined business is about $3.9 million.
And now it's six.
Now it's six.
Okay,
so like,
that's it for me.
Like I said, we were delighted.
Yeah, me as well.
Good.
And our next question comes from Mac Whale with Cormark. Mac, please go ahead.
Hi, John. Sorry, I'm going to go on Illumination again.
I expected nothing else, Mac.
Yeah. when you look at how you're set up to go to market, and you addressed this a little bit already, but is there a way? Do you go to market uniformly the same way in the various verticals that you're looking at? And if so, do you see room for shifting how you go to that market or the particular markets? Like, are there new customer types that you need to reach out to, or do you hit different decision makers in the same types of customers? I'm just trying to get an idea of how much room you think there is to be sort of innovative in how you actually get those sales.
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I mean, if your question is how do we compare, are we following the same formula across the breadth of our businesses? There's a general principle there, and the principle is that we rely on a last mile partner in every business to be local in market and to make sales to arrange sales with end users. That's a fixture that will stay here. But we think that there is a significant change that we need to make in our new business model for Illumination to streamline and reduce the cost of getting product from us to that end user. We're really in a cost struggle, and the cost struggle is to get the cost of a solar-powered outdoor light as installed to be cheaper than a grid-tied light in new construction. So it's not sufficient for us to say we're going to achieve that simply by the technology. We have to look at all aspects of getting this product from, you know, kind of concept to delivery as to be lower than the incumbent. And if we do that, our thesis is there will be greater take-up. So the interesting part of lighting right now is a grid-tied lighting is it needs to be installed by an electrician. And electricians are generally high-wage individuals or companies. Solar lighting, because it's 12 volt, typically 12 volt, maybe 24 volt, does not need to be installed by an electrician. So finding ways that we can take those elements, and that's only one element, but finding a more direct and a more cost-effective way of getting these products into end-user hands effectively contributes just as much as reducing the cost of the bill of materials. Hmm. So we're looking at this in a comprehensive way. We're prepared to make whatever changes we have to make in order that end users can enjoy these products at a lower cost than the comparable grid-tied alternative.
Okay.
And again, this is only for new construction. You know, I don't think we'll ever be able to compete. I shouldn't say ever, but not in the near term are we ever going to compete for the replacement of luminaires that are already attached to the grid with a solar alternative. Mm-hmm. It's not likely to be the case.
And do you think it's some years out before you're able to take some of the approaches you see in signals and bring that into illumination? For instance, you've got, it's not just a sale on cost, like you go and you're offering telematics or other types of services or capabilities to your end user that they just couldn't do before, and they're willing to pay up for that. And I'm wondering whether in illumination, because we've seen that in non-solar LED lighting, we've seen, for instance, the price of technology remaining high, but you're sort of offering the customer ability to control light intensity or things that they couldn't do before and integrating it into the building controls and that type of thing. I'm wondering whether this is illumination really, it's still too early, outdoor illumination is still too early to see that type of value add, and it really is just hit the price point.
Oh, no, I don't think so. I think that within this year, I'm hopeful that we can bring some of those innovative approaches to the way we take product to market. Hang on, I'm going to sneeze. Or maybe I'm not.
And so when you look at then at how Signal, because Signal has been doing quite well in terms of the growth, is there anything in Signals that the sales, the way it's set up or the way to go to market, so anything that's not being done in illumination that's sort of obvious and it's kind of a low-hanging fruit that you just need to implement, you just need to get it transferred into that part of the business?
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, one of the strategic technologies that we think applies to all our businesses is connectivity. And I think it opens a world of possibilities for us, that it would allow us to do, and I'll just give you an example of, and this may be a bit far-fetched for 2016, but, it may be possible for us to consider selling light instead of lights. But the only way you can really do that is if you can meter the amount of light that you're actually selling. And the only way you can do that is if you have connectivity and the ability to turn on and turn off the lights from a remotely.
Mm.
So those things are all, those are ideas that we kick around now that may find their way into the future. Now, I want to be careful to say that this is not part of our sales plan at this point in time. These are all ideas and concepts, all of which we are thinking about and studying, and we're going to try to figure out, you know, what of these things customers might value, and then shape our offering accordingly. We think we are going to have to be innovative in these respects in order to get really significant take up with these products. But the first step, and it's a great first step, is let's get the cost. Let's prove that the cost is down and is down lower than the grid tied alternative. That gives us a starting point that we don't have now. Right now, everybody who buys a solar light that could be connected to the grid is paying a premium for solar. If we can take the need to pay a premium away, we think that this goes from a very small business to potentially a very large one.
Okay, so moving to manufacturing or operations, the contract manufacturing you've switched over, are you, I'm just wondering, how are you pleased with that? Is it sort of reached the limit in terms of what you can get out of that in terms of cost savings?
Some of them may be listening, so I don't really want to say we've reached any limits. But I'd say that we're pretty pleased with performance generally. I will tell you that in the 2 years that I've been here, our deliveries, our ability to deliver product from order to ship has reduced tremendously through this period. So our contract manufacturers are doing an excellent job when we can give them accurate forecasts of turning product around and getting it out the door. And in fact, we're now down to ship dates that are so short. I heard somebody complaining the other day, it doesn't give them enough time to change their mind on what they on their order, because we're getting them in and shipping them out so fast. So that's a big change. You know, I think when 2 years ago, Nick, what were we, about 14 weeks or something sometimes to ship lanterns?
Yeah.
So we had some very long lead times in the past that are shortening up now. So they're doing a great job for us, I think. And we love the model.
And does that... those comments all pertain to North America and Europe equally, or is there some room to, say, apply some of this in Europe?
Well, you see, there's an open switch there right now, because the acquired SABIC companies are self-manufacturers, and in fact, in Finland, they moved into a new plant operation within a few weeks of the close of the transaction. So they have a brand new shiny production facility that they're using. We're going to spend some time looking at efficiencies in 2016 and really try to determine what makes sense. And I don't think there's a single answer to this. I mean, certainly contract manufacturing works better, I would say, generally with smaller, lower value, high volume items, and self-manufacturer typically works better for very large, complex, less frequent, more customized sort of products. And with the SABIC group, they certainly have products on both ends of that spectrum. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a little bit of adjusting that we can do, but this isn't a high priority for us.
Great. Okay. So those are all my questions. Thanks, John.
Great.
Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. And our follow-up question comes from Deepak. Deepak, please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my question. So I guess we are analysts, so we'll ask some financial questions here again. Going back to the cash flow, You guys have put in, by my math, about $9.7 million into non-cash working capital year to date. Last year, I think the total was about $4.5 million. Inventory was up in Q3, almost double sequentially. How should we think about cash flow and working capital investment here? How do you guys think about it? Should we expect more working capital investment in 2016, or can we expect some cash from operations generated in the business? Thanks.
Hey, Deepak, it's Evan here. There's a bit of seasonality with the accounts receivable. You'll notice it does jump up. Our off-grid and our on-grid business does actually have a bit of seasonality to collecting those. So we'll see a pretty big influx of cash offsetting that receivable at the end of this year. As far as inventory goes, we did pick up a little bit with SABIC. We do have a bit in Illumination and the on-grid business to run those. So, we expect it to be, not a tremendous amount of working capital going forward, but there is a bit of seasonality you're probably seeing right now.
So, go ahead.
The businesses where we pick up inventory or we have to invest in working capital as we grow would be our off-grid business. A lot of these products come from offshore suppliers and have to find their way into inventories in order to satisfy demand. We've got a mix in our on-grid business because there is a bit of a change phenomenon happening there, which is another interesting thing for you to note, in that we have some of our customers are now opting to buy PV modules themselves, and so our work will become more engineering and balance of system work, so this will be smaller dollar sales, typically some larger margins. And we do have some customers where we're providing extended terms financing to help them through to the point that these projects are connected to the grid. And are generally then purchased by off-takers. So it's going to be that particular business is going to be a little bit fun to watch and try to understand what's happening to margins. We spoke about it yesterday, and our new measure is going to be looking at contribution from this business, just because we'll have this oddball mix of things that are happening there as we move forward. But it's one where generally you would expect to see a little bit of investment in working capital. Illumination is only because of the lead times for some of the products that we have that we've brought in some inventory. But the signals business generally, other than SABIC, is one where we should be able to grow the business with no investment in working capital.
Okay, and do you guys have a target for positive cash generation or positive free cash flow on a sustaining basis, notwithstanding further acquisitions? Is that something that you guys think about, or is it still early days?
Well, we got some new things that we're starting to think about, and that's, we're starting to look at, the capital employed in our individual businesses and assessing that on a cost of capital basis. Free cash flow, this is part of this next series of analytics that we're going to apply. I really don't have to. I don't think we have anything we can tell you today on that. But I just saw Evan write that down. Anything else?
No, that's very helpful. I appreciate the time and the welcoming of my questions.
Okay, great. Operator, anything else? Anyone else?
We have no further questions at this time, sir.
Okay. Well, I want to thank all listeners for being part of the call today. If questions occur or come to mind after this call, we invite you to contact us directly. And again, thanks for your attention. I think we'll call... we'll call the call to a close at this time. Thanks, operator.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the conference call for today. If you have any further questions, please call our Carmen Investor Relations toll-free number at 1-877-255-8483. Thank you for participating. Please disconnect.